Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
A safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Well, welcome everybody to this show, which is the Sunday, 15th of October, 2017, another episode of An Emerging Forest. And this week we have a returning guest on, David Whitman, and he wants to talk about some strategies and some things that he understands and some coaching tips about how to treat yourself. And this show has a deep base of self-value and sort of a different perspective from what we're taught generally in this society. And I've spent many shows developing my perspectives on how old our souls are, which is really an unfathomable number. And that if we look at the trendy business or the quote-unquote several hundreds of years history developing a certain topic, that's not really even close to our agendas or our age's agenda or our soul's agenda. Our soul's agenda is, it's not even million, you can't even look at it as being millions of years or billions of years, because it's much longer than that, because you've spent huge, huge amounts of time developing a psyche, developing a coping thought process by putting yourself through many, many, many different types of scenarios and developing one side of the coin and developing the other side of the coin and then finding different sides of the coin to develop so that you understand the perspectives that are coming and going from many, many different angles. And when you start to feel into that, you start to say, well, there's this trendy thing going on in society that everybody is supposed to get behind and worship as the great cause. And you realize that it's only got like a few hundred or maybe a few thousand years of effort behind it, whereas the passions that are deep in yourself are so much longer and so much more, there's so much more research, your personal research and groups of people that you've been with that are like-minded, who have done so much research and so much work and so much development of key pieces of what I like to look at as longer-term technology, and I like to look at the longer-term technology as being the ones that leave no waste behind, the living technology, the bodies that we inhabit, the plants that allow our ecosystem to function, the ecosystem itself, the quote-unquote illumination systems, and all of the other conscious systems that we interact with. So that's sort of the first part of changing your perspective and starting to value yourself. And along or amidst that thought development, I also have introduced my day job, quote-unquote, outgrowth of that, which is the Produce Club, which is finding cheap ways to upgrade the nutritive value of the food that we eat, which is an amazing step, even if you're stepping from eating processed food to eating conventional food. So if you are interested in those topics, I don't want you to, you know, page through all of the vast, you know, number of episodes. I mean, there's almost a year's worth of weekly episodes. Email me at RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com and include a, you know, one or several topics that you're interested in listening to my perspective on, and I'll send you a few suggested shows. Of course, all of the shows, I really, really try hard not to put a show together that doesn't have something that's really interesting to me and should be, well, maybe interesting to other people. So without, you know, basically that's the reference material that is in the back episodes. And so with that as a foundation, greetings, David. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Alan. I really liked what you just said, a very very astute commentary and views, particularly talked about the soul and the timelessness of it. You know, it's very, very accurate. And I was sitting here, and the my roommate's two cats, kittens, are playing around. Pretty funny. It's a male and female. I learned a lot from them. And I was thinking of soul and animal soul and where they are in their development, or perhaps part of our soul is in the animal kingdom as well. We don't necessarily know. It's hard to say. It's possible to say. We can make conjecture or assumptions, but we don't know. But and I also thought, looking at the kittens, it's communication and how they communicate and how we communicate as a species, both internally and externally, and how that affects us and how that that impacts our lives and other people's lives. Because I've, I don't know if you know this or not, but words are only 7% of communication, and that's pretty staggering if you think about how much time we spend talking, right? And,
yeah,
and
like,
the fact
exactly.
That, yeah, and the fact, you know, look at it's more so now. It's weird. We're in a visual age. Everything is much more visual, but yet the mass way of communicating is by text or IM or email, you know, with emoticons, which becomes your visual aspect to it. But you know, how much information is being lost in that type of communication? Because the majority of communication is actually physical. It's body language, it's movement, you know, also, you know, energetically being around another person. But the physical aspect is the majority of communication, followed by vocal, you know, your timbre of your voice and your how fast you, the way you speak and your tone, things like that, you know. For example, if you type to someone, "I love you," on text, it's a pretty benign statement. But if you add voice and emotion, and it's a big difference going, "I love you," to "I love you." There's a big difference, as you can tell. And, you know, so the subtleties and the dynamics are lost in that type of communication. And when we communicate ourselves to outside world or within ourselves, it's important to understand the different levels of communication, I believe. Even if you are just typing words to someone, you know, still having that dynamic aspect you can't necessarily add other than emoticon, I guess, or visual to go with words. But, yeah, communication is and I was a speech communications major, so in one form or another, I dedicated my life to communications, be it freelance writing, broadcasting, speaking, or what have you. But But what are your thoughts on communication, how we communicate and how that affects us? And, you know, as for example, as a coach, actually most of my time is listening. Listening is the great skill. When you're coaching someone, you're not giving them advice. You're not solving their quote-unquote problem. No one's broken. You're just really, in my view, you're giving them space to solve the problem and to questions and to let the person who you're coaching work it out, because the solution is within. It's not without.
Right. So
I don't have all the answers.
We actually have all of our own answers. We just don't give ourselves credit for them. So you have two topics that you've sort of put on to the conversation piece, and the first is you're very interestingly discussing how communication between people is actually being destroyed by electronic interaction methods. And as an example, you're saying, okay, you're conversing with someone via text, which doesn't include all of the other, you know, if you were proximate to that person, if you were next to that person, you would be communicating with them via so many other angles, so many other methods. And I was reminded of a talk that I went to go see by Paul Stamets, who is the author of the magazines, or the magazines Fungi Perfecti basically, I can't remember the exact title of the book, but it's basically Fungus will save the world, or I can't remember the right title. But he was basically saying that our bodies are, I don't know, 60% or 70% fungus, and when you encounter another person, your fungal cloud encounters their fungal stink cloud. And you're communicating without even speaking, without even saying anything, by exchanging, you know, things via that. And it's pretty well understood in the tree community that if you have a good selection of trees, or a selection of trees that, you know, the trees would like to live with, you know, one of those and one of those and one of these in the neighborhood, because they all do different jobs. So maybe your predisposition to doing one job in the community makes you a particular type of tree, and you're best suited to be hanging around with, you know, if you're performing, you know, the produce fetcher job, you should be like, one, or so there should be two people like that in a larger community, and you're basically enabling the rest of the community to eat healthy, but they're not going to be doing your job. So you're a particular type of tree, and they're all, you know, you're a feeder tree, and the rest of the community is, you know, different types of other trees that are doing, you know, so it's basically community, and giving, so basically people who come in with problems. My first thing would be to try to get them to understand that they're just on the road, they're just on a journey, and that our society's discussion of what is acceptable is really so narrow. And if you're not able to, quote unquote, get up in the morning and go to work and be happy and smile all day, you've got something wrong with you. Whereas very, very minimal part. I mean, people like freak out, and I know that, you know, people just. I mean, I freaked out in 2005 when I just was off the tracks a little bit. Well, I was off the tracks by a little bit more than a little bit, but I caused myself to have a huge panic attack over something relatively minor in my life.
And how did you work that out?
Oh, I've worked it out over the last almost 13 years, but I derailed myself from a job that I had. It was meant to be. It's, you know, just a part of, you know, your path. I mean, even if you pull a huge panic attack and run away and go hide, you can't. I don't look back at that and say, oh, I shouldn't have done that, but it was a mistake. I look back at that and basically say, I am who I am now because I did that. And it's part of, you know, every place you put your foot is some place you need to go. So you need to accept that where you are is where you are, and that you're moving through experiences that you desperately need.
I think you raise a great point, and I'd like to open this up to everyone that's listening. I won't call it a challenge, but you're listening right now. Think about something you do this week, tomorrow, that you may end up being a mistake. It may completely blow up in your face, but by doing it, you're growing, and maybe it's something you always wanted to do or have been afraid to. So I'm just opening it up to listeners to do something out, quote unquote, to be totally cliche, outside of the box. Do something to take you out of your comfort zone. Do something that moves your life forward in some way, something you didn't expect to do or something you always wanted to do but never have. Take that chance. Take that risk. And don't worry about, quote unquote, failure or the mistake, because guess what? You made them before, you'll make them again. How many times you fall off the bike trying to learn to ride? How many times have you done something you thought was just terrible, like it just messed everything up, and then down the road it actually may have been the best thing you ever did. So, you know, we have the hindsight of 2020, but also we become myopic in our views of what we're capable of and what we can do and what we quote-unquote should do. But do something, take that risk this week. Don't be afraid to fail. If you do fail, don't think of it as failure. It's a growth process, because, you know, that is how we grow. We have this aversion to pain in our society. I mean, you can see it as far as, how people have to be on mood-altering opiates or something to be like the Brave New World, the Little Red Pill, or whatever it was called, Aldous Huxley. Anyhow, there's this idea that everyone has to have a smile on their face all the time. It always has to be like this balance. And not everyone's, it's not going to be balanced all the time. You know, it's good to have equilibrium, but allow yourself to you know, maybe be primal a little bit. Don't be afraid to step out and to really to express yourself and to be yourself. That's the key. The key is being yourself and knowing. I think it's a statement, know thyself. And I think that's really important. And sometimes knowing ourselves can be painful, and it can, you know, we tend to avoid those uncomfortable situations. But that's something that, you know, that you experienced, Alan, when you had the panic attack, but yet you followed through, and even all these years later, there's still some reverberations of that, but you're in a much better place than you were then. And at the time may have seen a mistake, but in the end, it really wasn't. So there's that idea of perfectionism we kind of are raised around in some ways, that there's the perfect mate, there's the perfect job, there's the perfect place to live, there's the perfect car, and there's not, it doesn't exist.
That's very true. And one of the ways that as I moved through and sort of allowed myself to do more and more things, I changed the words that I use from mistake or failure to training. And so I don't use the word mistake or the word failure I use the word training or practice or something like that, where you can say to yourself, well, when I came into this life, there were a lot of things that I just did, and everyone was amazed how naturally talented I was at those things. And if you look at the quote-unquote long-term view of your skill development, all the way back to when you were a neophyte at that particular skill, you can sort of get the impression of how long it really took you, and it is an untold stacked number of repetitions and practices going all the way back to when you were all thumbs at that event, an untold number of practice sessions previously over many, many lifetimes. So mm-hmm. if you're in it, so you have to, or I, it's not you have to, if you can change your perspective to sort of have this hunger for things that you're bad at, instead of, oh, I'm just going to do the things that I'm good at because I can show off and I won't fall down and get bloody knees and skinned elbows. What it is to look at the landscape of skills and say, what am I really terrible at? Those are the things that would change my character, the role-playing character that we play here. Those are the things that if I just put in like 2 or 3 months effort would change my character and what I'm able to manifest and do by so much, because right now I've got no hours into that skill set.
Right. No, that's true. You know, it's funny you bring that up. I went to an art opening yesterday, and first of all, every artist at one point whose art was in the show, there was obviously that point where this could be a failure, but they stuck with it, and they created their art. The owner of the gallery, the woman who runs it, the same thing. You know, wow, I'm going to run a gallery, and how am I going to do this? The great thing was that there was a woman there who was going to read writing that she created, and she had never done that before, and she was nervous, and I asked her. She goes, no, I've never done this. And her boyfriend was there to provide moral support. But, you know, she stepped out. She stepped out of the box. She, you know, she did a great job. And that's a way, when you share a part of yourself in that manner, either through creative art or through spoken word or through music, for example, I mean, you really are leaving yourself very vulnerable. And I think that's where the fear of mistake and the fear of error, you know, of messing up, it leaves us very vulnerable, and there's that fear of vulnerability and surrender that we have inside of us. Society teaches us, and I think that that is something that that's an important part of growth, is to be able to go to those vulnerable places, not just as far as like things you want to do, but emotionally vulnerable places where we are open to huge rejection or failure or things like that. You know, things where we could get hurt deeply, because if we don't take those chances, then we're never going to know what it's like. We're never going to know that rich experiences, like the soil that the great organic food grows in. That soil has its own experiences, its own what created it, right? I mean, it's has its own energy, so to speak. And if we don't evolve ourselves, both in within and, you know, outside of our lives as well, we become stagnant, and the rich soil then doesn't provide the nutrients that it once provided for the growth.
Yeah, it's interesting that this society, at least of the class of persons that you and I belong to, has been instructed to have a set of rules for or a consensus concept for how your life is supposed to go and what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. And it's so narrow and it's so small, and we're so large and we're so broad, get into even elementary school, and they're not able to sit still for this narrow definition of life. They fail. And right away, everyone else in the room is given an example, and they make a really big example out of this person, whether it's a disciplinary problem or whether it's a learning problem. They make a really big deal out of this person so that everyone else is completely terrified of ever stepping across the line. You're absolutely, it's like you have an internal understanding of where the line is, and you would never even go within 100 miles of it. And I had to do, and I know everybody else in the audience has had to understand that's internal. It's been created by society and by society's example, but it's internal within ourselves. And if we want to grow, we need to start dropping parts of that. And then when you start dropping that and become conscious of what the programming is that's been put inside of you, then you really start to just grab whole handfuls of it and just throw it out and become conscious of what you've been taught. And then you even become conscious of yourself saying, who am I? How developed am I to be able to see this when, you know, you look around you and everybody else seems perfectly happy and functional, and for the most part, you know, 90% plus are just going around with that set of programming guiding their lives. And then you have to be super nice to everybody and say they need the experience that they're having. I can't point my finger at them and say, they're brainwashed, or they're asleep. No, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is everybody is.
People are doing the best they can with what they have, you know, with the knowledge that they have at that time. It's
going back to the development example. People are doing the development that they need. And you might look at them and say, oh, that person's asleep, and, you know, roll your eyes. But in reality, they're doing the development that they need to get to the next step. So they're fine.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's
I look at everybody and I see 100% healthy individuals, because they're all doing exactly the development that they need, regardless of what they're doing. The place that they are right now, it's a Hafiz, right? The place that they are right now, God circled on a map for them. There they are, developing XYZ. It's just our preconceptions of where they should be are so narrow. And theirs are, too, that they freak out when they're doing something that they need to be doing.
And it goes to speak to issues like people that are homeless, for example. I mean, there are all reasons why people are homeless. It's something that has existed for always at some point, some way. But, you know, where it is now, I encountered someone last night who asked me for money, and I didn't have much on me. I just had changed. And I really only had 9 cents in my pocket. And that's like, I gave the guy 9 cents. And he was like, so grateful. I was shocked because I figured he'd be like, well, 9 cents, what am I going to do with that? So there was a real sincerity to the 9 cents that I gave him. And he's in a different path than I am, but it's his, for whatever, no matter what got him to that point, that's the path he's on. Now, where he goes from there, I mean, some people, that's a lifestyle they choose. They choose to drop out and to live that way. Other people, it's not a choice. It's a circumstance they find themselves in. But I think that speaks to what you said about we're all on our own journey.
Yeah. So let's hold that thought for a minute, and I'm going to play a song and take a break at the bottom of the hour. And the song is from Darv the Bard, and it's Hal and Toe. See you in a few minutes, everyone.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. Was the crest when you were born? Your father's father wore it, and your father wore it too. Hal and Toe, Johnny Rumpelow.
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to an emerging forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back, everyone. And we're continuing our discussion about leading a balanced life. And leading a balanced life means having parts of your life that are well-developed, and you might have your economy there, but also recognizing that there are passions within you that you want to explore. And then there are just blind spots where you're like, I don't know anything about that. And sometimes people get ejected from their well-developed, you know, 9-to-5 hamster in a running wheel, gerbil in a running wheel life, and thrown into a life where they're just like, they're searching and quote unquote, they're in the gutter, and they've got like, they're like grasping and all they're coming up with is splinters through their hands, and they're injured and they just look totally lost. A cycle. And the people that are doing that are actually grasping for an entirely different character that they're going to come out of their change and be playing. And I appreciate that in my life because I'm going through that right now, and I literally see the character that I was before, and I have no idea what the character is that I'm progressing toward, but David and I are both very, very neophyte actors, and I really appreciate, you know, putting on one costume and taking off another costume, or having people look at me in one costume and say, wow, you're really suited for that role, and then seeing me in another costume, and they just say, wow, you're really suited for that role, too, and just saying, but okay, that's on screen, and you do some work to play a character, but in real life, you have to be willing to take off your quote unquote comfortable clothes, put on something that in quote unquote real acting, role playing, quote unquote real life, you're really bad at something, and to go into a room of people who are really good at it and look like an idiot. So, Dave, are you back again?
Yes.
Oh, great. So, you were going to develop some strategies along this line, or I'll let you take it from here.
Well, you know, I believe what you said, you know, is very accurate as far as acting. And but when you act, you're not playing a role. You actually become the character. Because if you play at acting, you're going to be coming across that way. And I've learned this. It's not my own knowledge. And it's really about putting part of yourself into the character, but also becoming the character. So if I'm playing, like I did a scene with a scene partner in my acting class of The Lion in Winter, and I played King Henry and she played Eleanor, and I wasn't playing King Henry. I was King Henry. I refer to myself in the first person when I was talking to my acting teacher about the scene. During that time in the stage, that's the scene was a living room before a holiday party, and that was my place. So it's like going into a space where you're, that is your reality during that time, and that, you know, that during that time I'm not playing at the character and I'm not on a stage in a set that is his house or his castle. In this case, I am the character that is my castle and that is my room and that is my wife that I have basically sent off to a castle because she keeps wanting to take the crown from me and have me killed, as a kind of a prison for her. So I am that person, and that's the key when you're acting in that regard. But I think that's something that happens in life as well, is that we become an actor in our own production, and we lose track of who we are. I was reading about narcissism lately, and I was reading about the false self that the narcissist creates that actually usurps the true self. And you see that in all kinds of ways. People lose who they are, and they become someone else, either for the 9-to-5 job, for their partner, for status or what have you. And the person they are becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, and this false ego, this creation of theirs, takes over. And then the person who created it, essentially Frankenstein's monster, has overtaken the doctor. And where is the creator of that, of that person? You see it for people when they, for example, they get a certain type of job or a certain status, and they forget about their roots per se, but they just, they're not, they lose who they are, and their soul, to speak, you could say, in a sense, and I guess that's a good term for someone selling their soul. They lose themselves in pursuit of really it's insecurity, because they feel it as themselves, they can't accomplish what they need to accomplish. They have to take on this false identity. And I mean, I've been guilty as anyone. I mean, I think we've seen that in our lives at different times. We have essentially become someone else, and not always knowingly. And that's when we become the actor in our own production, and we're not, we've lost the script.
Yeah, it's a very deep set of mirrors, and. Mm-hmm. If we take a bird's eye view of our soul, and we look at the many, 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 the infinite number of branches that we've explored, and then we say, okay, we knew who we were at this point, but then we went down this branch and we explored this job, and we see all the value that we got out of that quote-unquote character mining, and then we died or however that job was snipped off, and then we came over and we did some exploration somewhere else. It's interesting because it's all meaningful, and it all, our soul is so greedy with its time that it doesn't put us in a configuration unless it's drinking the best wine it's ever drunk. It's basically is so impatient and so vengeful of wasted time that it doesn't waste our time, particularly understand why we're in a particular configuration, wandering maybe seemingly endlessly, but there is value to it, and maybe... And I might be able to say this is true. Maybe it's to build up a frustration level that we've been down the same hallway again and again, to build up the frustration level where all of those past characters that we're still trying to emulate all have not just no attraction to them, but they, all of those hallways reject you. And all of those hallways are basically, to use a fancy word, they're anathema to you. So all of those, you can't go down those hallways anymore. They collapse. and you're back on maybe what one would call the main road, looking for, and I would, if that happens in your life, maybe you're looking for not just a small change in your character, but a very, very large change in your character, and maybe all of that development that you've done that's just collapsed and you can't go there anymore, all of that gets summed up and pushes forward your character into a completely different area that, you know, on the first billions of times through, you didn't have the courage to go after. But now you don't have any choice because that's right, what's right in front of you.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think you, that's exactly right. What you're going with that, and it touches on something that, as far as like old pathways and where we once were in regards to the soul, but also regards to our past. I was back at my home recently, and I had bins in the attic of old magazines that I collected growing up as a kid, and I'd never thrown them out. I was always thought, well, you know, sell these someday or just keep them when I'm like 90 years old, have something to read. And so I took them down because I'm, you know, trying to get less there in the house. And I organized them. There was a selection of sports magazines from when I was a kid, and then when I was older, music magazines. I was shocked by how many I'd collected. And I was really kind of like hung up for about a day figuring out what to do. Like, do I sell them? Do I, you know, how am I going to do that? What's the process? And I finally decided to just put them in garbage bags and take them to recycling and be done with it. Because I looked at it like, what price can I put on my past, essentially? But also, I learned the knowledge from those publications and the information I needed at the time, and I really had no interest in even looking at them again. And I just, you know, got rid of them because that person, no longer exists. There's no connection to that anymore.
Yep.
It's just nostalgia. It's empty nostalgia at that point. It's holding on. It's like there's something very cathartic. It just went, okay, it's gone, done. Not looking back, not holding on to it to sell, not seeing it as a commodity, just seeing it as you know, like as a serpent shed its sense of skin, that it, you know, I'm shedding off a layer that I outgrew years ago.
Yep, that's very true. At one point, as you just said, I went back to the house that I grew up in, and I was an isolated child in the community for my own reasons, and I read books, and I had many, many books in the house, and I got back there at one point, and it was just like, well, do I get all these together and sell them and have a yard sale, or what do I do? And I finally just wound up taking a bunch of trips to the Salvation Army and unloading, you know, like wagon load after wagon load of boxes of books. There were 84 boxes of paperback and hardback books. And just basically giving them away and coming back to a room that now had empty bookcases on all the walls and, you know, an empty closet, which was previously stuffed with books. So you're basically like, you literally don't have a connection to that. You sort of remember all the work you put in. There's no nerve there that you tear and basically you say, it's sort of like when you've done, when you've done a field of study to the point where it's just second nature to you, you don't need all of the materials that you use to get you to the mastery because you are those materials and you can just basically, as you just said, they shed away or my analogy before was all of those hallways that you walk down collapse and you can't get to them anymore because you don't need them.
That's exactly right. And that's what I learned about myself, this experience was that I was, for the music and also from the sports, which I did want mastery. I wanted complete knowledge of what I was into. I wanted to know every last detail, very much like almost savant-like. I became very focused on that, and that was really my
right.
focus. I mean, it's exclusion to school, and it changed. It went from sports to then music. And now I'm more interested in the mysteries, so to speak, of existence and why we're here and such as that. But you know, music and sports, those are the two guiding forces of my life for a long, long time. And I wanted to achieve mastery. I wanted to have as much knowledge as possible. I was like a sponge. I wanted to absorb everything to the amount of overkill to where I could, you know, for music, I needed to know where an album was recorded and what was that place like and who produced it and what guitar did this musician use and what was the amp and, you know, what was the atmosphere when they were recording it and what's the story of why that song was written. And then I want to hear all the songs were written for that album they didn't they recorded but didn't release. It becomes like, you know, all that. And then for sports, it was about wanting to know all the different players, what position they played and you know, just detail after detail after detail. So that's something that I've always had with my interests, where they were very, very single-mindedly focused and also very detail-oriented and just a mastery and knowledge of anything I could have. I was just like, it was just a hunger for the knowledge and everything. And that's how I've always been. But that was an example. Once I saw those magazines, it was like this obsessive thing. Like, you know, I wanted to know everything. Then the things I didn't care about, like in school, I was a horrible student. If I didn't like the teacher or the class, I'm not going to be a good student. I had to be into it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never found during my early life things that I was extremely passionate about or things that really attracted me. And I received a degree in chemistry, but even during the time when I was studying chemistry and knew of people who would just go to the library and read journals endlessly or go read math books endlessly, I was just looking at it and I was like, it was like I was observing myself walking through these university hallways, going into these laboratories and doing experiments. And there was actually a voice in my head that was basically saying, well, you're doing this, but you don't really want to get very serious about it. And so it was basically like I was having a life. I was getting a PhD, but at the same time, there was really a defined part of myself that was saying, okay, you're really pouring a lot of effort into this, but don't get like don't go overboard like those people are over there and actually really take this stuff like too seriously. And it's sort of to be reminded, you know, 20 years later or 25 years after that experience, now with the perspective that I have now of science and what science is and where it comes from and what it's about, now I understand why I had that voice. and to understand what that means to me now is there was literally a part of myself that was saying, okay, this is the part of you're going to have this life. This is going to take you to a certain part in your life. This is going to take you to a certain year in your life. And then we're just going to shed it all. But I wasn't conscious. Okay, then I'm going to get to 45 years old and I'm going to have a nervous breakdown and I'm going to explode my life. But literally, there were things that were happening earlier in my life that was basically, okay, let's not get too serious about this. And then pushing away having romantic relationships because probably really didn't want to hurt anyone when I actually, I would not have been free to redefine myself. I would have had entanglements, and that wasn't permitted because I basically had to be able to be on the street. And it's really strange to look at the path and say, oh my gosh, in order to be on the street, I couldn't have done any of that.
What do you see as the next step?
Oh, I have no idea. Because of the way I look at government and government being anti-fertility by, you know, basically ruling and making things. Mm-hmm. You know, basically, we're talking tonight about doing things that you are passionate about or developing skills in areas that you're poor at. And some of those things are going, I mean, you basically look at a lion and a lion does what a lion does and nobody says, hey, Mr. Lion, that thing that you just did that you're really good at is evil. You know, and the lion basically is, the lion is in Rumi's field, it's out beyond the notions of right doing and wrong doing. The lion just looks at you and says, I'm a lion, damn it. You know, and
right.
Everybody else needs to say that's a lion does, you know, an alligator, you know, and the alligator wildebeest crossing, hey, the alligator is an alligator. It's going to do what an alligator does. So my looking at myself is basically saying, okay, I really need to be able to appreciate that I might not be a 100% quote-unquote savory person. And if I've actually developed myself in past lives to the extent that I think I've developed myself, no, I'm actually really quite a devious and nasty person. And for cause to defend myself. And so, what do I want to do with that? What do I want to bet? So here's my bet. My bet is that I'm a really developed person. Okay, if I'm a really developed person, I want to do the following thing. I want to have a project that I want to develop. And so I'm going to go into the project. Let's say I want to own a bunch of land and I want to develop the ecosystem and I want to make it really fertile. So I'll just go into that project and say, okay, if I'm a developed person, I'll be able to get into this project by a seeming set of miracles, and it will just come to me. But if I'm not that developed person, I will set the goal. I will set my goal as being that project. And if I'm the developed person, parts of it will come to me quickly, but the parts that I need to develop the skill sets in order to get to the goal, those will come to me, and I will spend my time doing those. But if I'm completely developed, the whole project will just fall in my lap. So it's basically saying, okay, in order to get to that goal, you might have to learn some things that are unsavory. So you might have to be some political character who actually, you know, operates in back rooms and basically intimidates people and or does things that, you know, makes things come to you that, you know, people are like, you know, we don't do those things. Well, you do them if you actually want to get results. So I've set myself this fanciful goal somewhat along the lines of what I've just described, and the title of this episodic show, An Emerging Forest, I've set my goal to be to develop literally an emerging forest, which is one of the things that is being destroyed by this society. But I'm sort of anti this society, and I want an emerging one instead of being destroyed one. So that's the sort of that's sort of my psychology right now. And you're coming along and basically saying, well, there's all of these things that you're going to there's all these things that are going to put your nose out of joint because you're going to have to go do them and you don't really like to do them, or you're going to say, well, that's quote-unquote unsavory in this society. Well, are you a lion or are you someone who believes in good and evil?
Right. Right. And those are the traps. Those are the traps that we fall into because any kind of polarity is necessary. Polarity creates the tension, it creates change and creates, I mean, just the polarity of male and female creates life, for example. But I mean, anytime you take things from, the closer you get to the extreme of something is the closer they connect. Have you ever noticed that? Like the closer
the one really deep example of that is in 2014 when I was I'd been isolated from society for about 14 months or 15 months. Mm-hmm. I was literally trying to find out why I should live, and I was in an apartment on the main line. And at the bottom, when there was absolutely 0% chance of success, was when everything turned. And when I realized that everything was okay, you go from basically saying everything about my life is 100% incorrect and I can't continue living, is when you understand that everything in your life is 100% correct and you completely accept yourself. Well, that was what happened to me.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. That's so true because it's said that anything is achievable, and most people give up just right before they could achieve it, right? So like you that's why you never give. That's why a person never gives up on anything, because you keep going, because when you stop, it's probably when you're closest to achieving it. Now, there's also the aspect of letting go. At the same time, you don't want to become consumed by it. So there's kind of a fine line, but that's true that you. That once you think, oh, this is it. There's nothing. Then just it because you in a sense have let go because you're just like, well, this is not ever going to work. And then it does because A, you didn't give up. But at the same time, you didn't become so consumed by it that you constricted it. You know that the energy around
well,
it became
you,
like constricting
right, you
and
kept,
strangling.
You kept doing it, but mm-hmm. you turned your mind off.
Right.
And the naysayer who was saying you're never going to succeed was actually the out-of-joint energy that was causing you to enjoy experience of not succeeding.
Right.
And you're having the bliss of the frustration of trying to untie this impossible knot in your shoelace, but then when you are no longer entertained by the knot in your shoelace to the level of bliss, the knot comes untied because it's
mm-hmm.
no longer useful to the, it's no longer blissful to the soul for there to be a knot there.
Right.
So
that knot
when,
go
when
back
you,
lifetime.
It's also interesting to understand that training in one area never goes away. So, you might lift the weights, so to speak, as an allegory, for 20 years and then stop and go do something else and say, oh, I never completely developed that skill. Oh, you will. It's just not this time around.
Mm.
And to understand, as you were saying earlier in the show, to understand the timelessness of the soul is basically, I look at the soul as being an accumulator of experience. And as such, there's no past. All of where you've been has been completely recorded, and it's with you now. So yesterday doesn't exist, and the next second only exists when it exists. So the funny thing about the New Age movement, and they're saying, be in the now, and they're saying, well, don't live in the past, and don't, you know, scope out the future. My simplification response to that is, there is only the now, and if you are considering the past, you're actually incorporating or looking at the lessons of your past, and for some people and at some points in their life, that's actually wise to do that. So I guess I have some disagreements with some of the present-day New Age philosophies.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the point. I mean, if you are strictly in the moment and you're not considering the future at all, or if there's things from the past you're trying to forget, it's like there's pain from the past and trauma from the past to learn from. And getting back to coaching is part of what coaching is to therapy, of course, as well, is to drill down to where that trauma and pain is in the individual or even in yourself, and not be afraid to face it, and also kind of embrace it, because it's a part of who you are as much as the great things are a part of you that happen in your life as to who you are. And in some ways, it's a way to take the power away from the trauma, in a sense, because everyone has trauma of some kind. It could be completely different types of things, but it's going down to the deeper parts of those sides of yourself you don't want to see, because those are where you really, that's where the rich fertile earth is. That's where you can really grow from. Because you're going to a deep place. Anytime you go to a deep place, you're finding more nutrient, more nourishment. You know, you can always live on the surface where everything's just like, I'm this great person, I get this and this. But if you really look at the other side, where maybe the more shadowy aspect exists, being aware of that, and being aware of the things where you've had your hurts and your traumas and your pain, wounds and things, that's where you can grow from. That's where you plant your seeds. It sounds
right,
counterintuitive, I imagine, to some people, but it's,
yeah,
it's,
and
you
know, and it's painful.
True.
So, I think one of the key takeaways or big takeaways from tonight is, contrary to this society's teachings, if you live your life looking to be in discomfort and looking to be in pain, now not looking to cut yourself or wound yourself, but looking to
right.
be in a growth, growth athletically, growth spiritually, growth intellectually, looking to put yourself in uncomfortable places where you're learning, where you're growing, looking to examine society and looking to say, can we do better? And then looking to say, I'm going to put myself on the line here, putting making yourself very uncomfortable. I've sort of come to the realization that that's where I want to be in my life. That's what I want to be doing. And if I become
mm-hmm.
comfortable with something, I want to give it to somebody else for them to be comfortable with, or for them to be uncomfortable with and develop to a certain level of comfort. So
yeah,
sort of after a long life of saying, well, you know, I have this much money in the bank, and you know, I'm comfortable, and I don't have, you know, things to worry about financially. Now I'm just like, well, I seek to be without comfort, or to have less.
Mm-hmm.
I find comfort and happiness in discomfort and unhappiness. But
right.
I would be unhappy.
Right.
I would be unhappy if I was comfortable.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That you hit the nail on the head. Actually, that's so true. Yeah, and I think that's a really great takeaway for anyone listening tonight. That's, you know, challenge yourself and revel in your discomfort.
And look and have a. I really had to start by reading books on how certain things in society work. And one of the books that I read is Money Cycles by DeSoto, DeSoto, and it's on the Ludwig Mises Institute site for free as a PDF. And it's excruciatingly long, but literally in the first two chapters that are like 37 or maybe 50 pages long, they give you an example of sort of this massive rift, this massive intellectual rift. They say, well, here's a contract for how money is kept. And then
mm-hmm.
here's a different but similar contract for how money is kept. And you're looking at these two contracts, and one of them is an honest storage of money, and the
mm-hmm.
other one is the way the present financial system works, which is completely criminal. And you sit there and you have this intellectual rift in your mind, and you're saying,
mm-hmm.
no, I can't admit this to myself. And then I got a certain number of, you know, it was hard for me. I got a certain number of weeks of, you know, thinking about it, and I finally just had to admit that
mm-hmm.
that's what was going on, that there's this this function in society that's just openly criminal.
that's true.
And it makes the society function in a certain way. It's anti-fertility because it's basically an untruth. But
mm-hmm.
the society is basically built on a foundation of theft and of misstatement, so that we can't live with nature because our main foundation is anti-nature. So
right,
it's you know, all of this development, I mean, this is going back like to just after 2005 when I was reading these books, and you're sort of like, no, that's not really how things work. And it's just a matter of, you know, putting yourself in this really uncomfortable intellectual place, and then
mm-hmm.
after a while acclimatizing yourself to the fact that, no, you've really done all your homework, and it really works this way. And
yeah.
you grow up, and you're more sophisticated as a result of it, and you then get handed other opportunities to learn even more complicated topics.
Yeah, no, exactly. Very true.
So, are we at a good closing point right here?
Yeah, I think so. I feel this is good. I would like to, you know, if anyone listening does something, you know, that I mentioned earlier, challenge yourself this week, and if you want to share that with us next week and call in at some point, that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be awesome. If anybody does something, now please don't get yourself, you know, in a really bad situation, but you know, motivate yourself.
Like, tell you to,
and,
like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because we're talking about the line, and because we're talking about morals and, you know, lack of right and wrong, I kind of have to put a caveat on.
Yeah, don't go to a zoo and try to sleep with lions or anything. That's a little too much.
Right.
Don't try to sleep with a lion's den or taunt the gorilla.
Don't put yourself in any compromising positions, or at least don't call in if you have.
Right.
So where do people get in touch with you, David, if they would like to chat with you some more?
My email address is dwhitman0906@gmail.com.
And that's Whitman with an H. And I'm
yes.
Alan Ritter, and my email address is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. I run a small produce distribution business in the southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey area. You can find us on Facebook at produceclub.us, or you can just send me an email to the previous email and say, hey, how do I get service in my area? Once again, the subject of this program and my sign-off is you're a really old being. You are an incredibly developed old being, and you have died and lived and died and lived so many times that it is literally uncountable. Just to develop the set of social skills to be able to walk through a supermarket and get food off the shelf and leave the supermarket and pay for your goods, just to have the basic skills to interact with anyone in the most basic fashion, it's not a number that we can reach out and put a finger on. That's why it's so unbelievable how old we are. But it's just manifest. It's just obvious that we're that old. Realize that the things that you need to do personally are very different from what everybody else needs to do personally. That you as a soul have your own agenda and your own personal passion and development edges that you need to be addressing. And your day-to-day job, your survival thing, the thing that pays the rent, that's the survival thing. But you need to get along about the other things that really matter to you in order to move forward and in order to make this, you know, this 60 or this 80 years really a cutting edge for you. So I encourage you to just contemplate that, to, you know, listen in your mind, look, pull those things forward to yourself, and as David challenged you earlier in the program, to actually, you know, make some of that happen. And I think if you think about it, it's going to happen. Thank you so much, David, for being
on
the program tonight. And I look forward to having additional programs where you're on. So have a great night, everyone. Have a great night, David. And see you all next week.
For listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.